You're listening to the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 31, recorded Saturday, March 31st, 2012. UDID Fire. Much ado about UDID, jobs for iOS developers abound, and my guest today is AppsFire co-founder Uriel Ohayon. But first, the news. Apple informed developers via email that iTunes Connect will have individual reports for Sweden and Denmark from now on. For March, app sales earnings in Sweden and Denmark will be split and reported in two different documents, one covering the time period before the change and one covering the time period after the change. Earnings from sales that occurred before the change will be in the Eurozone financial report. Earnings from after the change will be in the new financial reports for Sweden and Denmark. I'm wondering what the benefit to us developers will be. Are the reporting guys searching for work to do that nobody actually cares about, just so that they are not bored? Speaking of nonsensical changes, Apple invented two new price tiers. Tier 63 is $124.99. And tier 69 is $174.99. Both tiers are available for both apps and in-app purchases. Can anybody explain to me what this is good for? Are apps too cheap? Does Singer want to sell more expensive in-app crap? You know, lower levels of tiers usually correspond with the price in dollars. The geek in me revolts. What's the secret algorithm here? UDID or didn't you? You have to get that right. Now that some rumors seem to indicate that Apple might be beginning to reject apps that are using the unique device identifier, developers are scrambling and ripping out the trusty old identification code and replacing it with something new. But that only seems to be part of the story. Tapbots published the original rejection letter they received from Apple, and this contains some very interesting information. This letter says that they were sending identity information to their server without having asked the user. Apple seems to actually do a man-in-the-middle attack on HTTPS when reviewing our apps. Tapbots was sending the UDID in a HTTP GET request over HTTPS. If you simply look at the data packets, then you don't know the URL that is being requested, because the first step in the HTTPS is to do a connect. Then the GET is performed and already encrypted. This man in the middle means that Apple has a tracing server that spoofs the HTTPS target and re-signs the packet such that it is still accepted by the URL connection on the device. This is technically easy. I blogged about how to spy on any app's traffic with the Charles debugging proxy app. What's interesting that we learn for the first time that not even encryption is holy to Apple. So if you are sending something naughty to your server, then don't rely on HTTPS thinking that nobody can see the contents. Better to send hashes instead of plain text. This is sort of similar to when the Path app sent your address book. Many people ask what should be used instead of UDID, and the privacy advocates generally say nothing. A user is not the same as a device. About the only market that requires to uniquely identify devices is advertising, especially when it comes to conversion tracking. If you need to have some sort of temporary identifier, then you can use CFUUID to create one, and then you can store it in the keychain. This will persist even when the app is removed, as opposed to the user defaults. For those who are developing libraries for ad networks, the de facto standard has become the OpenUDID project, which is available on GitHub. It was developed by one of the founders of AppsFire. There is a second competing project called SecureUDID, but when I surveyed the market as to which is winning, I found that most ad networks had switched to using OpenUDID. This includes the MobFox framework, which you might know that I originally developed. Flurry Analytics reports the relation of income of the three major app stores: Apple's App Store, the Amazon App Store, and Google Play, aka the Android App Store. The comparison they came up with is this: $1 on Apple's App Store is 89 cents on Kindle and 23 cents on Android. What's interesting is that Amazon is able to get the value proposition for developers into the vicinity to where it is for us iOS developers. While it certainly helps to have the marketing experience of the world's largest retailer and a dedicated device that locks people into their marketplace. And it still gives us a warm and fuzzy feeling that we are focusing on the App Store where the most money is made. Our grass is greenest. Yeah. Here's another good reason why we developers should always buy the latest Apple devices. An iOS forensics company has created a tool that lets law enforcement officials find out your passcode lock. There's a video where you can see them boot an iPhone with their own custom bootloader. iPhone hacker Chronic has told me that iOS devices with an A5 chip are safe. He says, quote, A5 devices can be jailbroken on per firmware basis, but their exploits are userland level, so passcode lock is safe. That means you should have no less than an iPhone 4S if you are worried about that the law or some lawless thugs who got hold of the software can decrypt all your secrets. Hey, it's a business expense, and of course we need proper test devices for our jobs. Speaking of security, the Australian Department of Defense has published a PDF that treats in great detail all the security aspects involved in using iOS devices in official agencies. It's a great manual to have and pass on to IT guys who are evaluating use of iOS devices in the enterprise. It contains background information as to which questions you should ask from government contractors whose apps are to be used on those secret agent devices. Conversely, if you are such a developer who is interested in the vertical market of government software, then this guide contains all the questions that you probably will be asked. So you can prepare yourself accordingly and have your apps be secure by design. If you are looking for iOS or Mac developers for your company or are looking for employment as such, then I'd like to draw your attention to my new hobby project. I wanted to have a blog combined with a Twitter feed where you could get the pulse of our industry. Though I don't want to have any extra work, so I made it such that if you create a login on xcodejobs.com, you can write a short blog post about the positions you are trying to fill. This I then can publish very, very easily. If this is too much effort for you, then you can also tweet me a link to the job profile on your site and I'll retweet it with the Xcode Jobs Twitter account. This is completely non-commercial and recruiter free. When I was looking for a name for this baby, I realized that all my favorite platforms we use Xcode to develop for. And since the name was free, I grabbed it. If I hear from Apple's legal department, I can always change it later. But they say, we'll cross this bridge when we get to it. Right now, there are record numbers of people tweeting about the site and following the Twitter account. So why not benefit from this attention too? Oh, and speaking of hiring, I've hired my first actual real employee. And it's great. He's going to start working with us next month and I can already feel our output increase. Many iOS developers shy away from this sort of commitment. Oh my god, how much that costs. What if you don't have any work anymore? But the reality is that work always grows larger and larger, and frankly, I cannot afford to pay it for contractors. At the current rates, an employee costs me about a third as much as a contractor based in USA or Europe. Yeah, and that's it for the news. And I promised you before, I've got a really special guest today. It's Uriel Ohayon. Did I say that correctly?
Well, it doesn't matter. Well, that's nearly true.
You spell it. What? How do you say your name?
It's Uriel Ohayon.
Uriel Ohayon. Sorry. So he's the co-founder of Appsfire. Appsfire is a promotion and discovery service for mobile app developers. And as such, they are interested in tracking performance. And lately, I already told you about this in the news. UDID is the hot topic, and AppsFire has a vested interest in UDID. And so, Uriel, we are going to talk about what's your take about UDID. Do we really need UDID? What do you use it for? And how do you now react with Apple seemingly rejecting apps using it?
Okay, great. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so first question, what do you need it for?
A lot of companies, either ad networks or analytics firm or applications and developers relying on tracking their users for the performance of their app or their campaign. We use it ourselves because we are a promotion service for mobile applications, and it's important for us and for our customers that we know whether a campaign has been performing correctly, whether a click on an app is translating into an installation. Of course, all that information is confidential and is treated in the utmost respect of privacy. But there are tens, if not hundreds, of companies that are working in the same manner, just like on the web, by the way. It's not something that is different. And we are using that in a very, very very critical manner. So when Apple announced that the UDD was deprecated, it was I think for a lot of companies and a lot of developers too, a big news.
Well, if we read the documentation, it basically between the lines says that Apple does not want to enable tracking of individual devices. In the notes in unique identifier, it says that developers should create their own CFU UID and use that on a per app basis and save it into the user defaults. So, what do you say to this? Do we really need to track individual devices? Because you want to track users, right?
Well, it's not really users. It's more the performance of a campaign, and tracking a user as such doesn't have any kind of real interest and purpose. And let me just add that Apple allows you to track and will allow you to track with what the protocol you just explained. So they don't have any problem with the fact that you are tracking your users, right, on a per app basis. What they don't want is to have the UDID as a reference of or unit of reference for tracking, cross applications. And obviously, I think Apple is going to, by doing so, hurting most of the free apps that are into the App Store that are relying on advertising revenue, because this is how the mobile advertising industry is built. But also is going to also affect a lot of the developers, even if they are not free apps, that are using third-party analytics services that are also relying on UDID.
Now you mentioned analytics services. I think isn't it true that you don't really need to know the number of devices, but you want to give somebody sort of an identity when he clicks on a banner and then later installs an app based on that, so that you know, okay, that was this click and that resulted in this install, but you don't really need to know that this is a certain device. And I think Apple is kind of worried analytics services, if they have a capability of uniquely identifying devices, then they can count the devices and they can say, okay, Apple has, they can basically say, okay, so many device IDs there are with a certain iOS versions, and then they can do some mathematical calculation and extrapolate from that, and they would be able to very accurately say how many iPhones of various types and operating systems are out there. And I think that's the thing that Apple doesn't want to allow anymore. If you
I don't know. I don't know, Oliver. You know, they've been very brief into their explanation, and they didn't say exactly. I mean, we suspect that the main reason why Apple has gone that way is because they are under, like other big companies, under a lot of scrutiny from the U.S. authorities about, you know, data privacy. But we don't know really what they are trying to do by deprecating the UDID. If they really want to, you know, if they really wanted to stop any kind of tracking, they would deprecate everything, including, you know, the MAC address, which maybe they will do one day, but they haven't done it yet. So at this stage, you know, at this stage, all we know is that, you know, they deprecated the UDID, that they created an alternative to create a device identifier on a per app basis. But I'm not sure, you know, how much they've realized of the consequences of what's going to happen for the, you know, the analytics industry, the ad industry, but mostly for the developers that require those two bricks.
Well, do you remember some time ago, I think it was last year, Steve Jobs was still alive, and he mentioned that they basically are angry at analytics companies because they blurt out information like, yeah, we saw a new iPhone, there's a new iOS version, and so because of this, it was sort of prohibited to transfer and even publish these informations, how many devices there are, and so on. But I think
Yeah, I remember very well this conversation. It was at All Things D, and the question was asked actually by Chris Froehlich, which is, by the way, one of the investors of Flurry Analytics. And the problem is that even if by, you know, by blocking the access to the UDID, you will know these things, okay, if you are an analytics firm, because it's not relying, you know, what Steve Jobs was pissed at is that they revealed the existence of the iPad before, you know, the iPad was even announced. And you know, the fact that there is an access to the UDID doesn't, you know, doesn't change anything. They would have been able to do it anyway. It just so happens that, you know, Flurry and sometimes other companies reveal some stats about the, you know, the iOS population, the number of devices. I'm not sure this is something that really hurts them, but I don't even know if it's a motivation by Apple. What I suspect most is that, you know, Apple wants to cover their, you know, to protect their users as much as possible, and protect also themselves from the, you know, the attention they're getting of, you know, around data privacy. So yeah, it's probable, you know, that there is some kind of concern around that, but really no one is really sure of what, why they were doing that and why they're doing that. And no one is also really sure. By the way, I don't know if you remember about this matter of analytics. They said at the time, and they wrote, that they would, you know, kind of reject any app that would have an analytic SDK embedded in it. And they came back to that because, you know, you cannot just live without analytics if you are an app developer. You need to know how your app is used and how to improve it. There's no other way. So yeah, you can build your own analytics system, but, you know, if you are a small developer, there's no way you're going to do that. I mean, unless you are extremely brilliant and extremely fast, which I suspect, you know, many are, but not everyone. And so, you know, it's not always because Apple decides something that, you know, it's, you know, it's done and it's never going back. So right now, all we know is that Apple has deprecated the UDID, that we should all get ready for some kind of alternative, and that, you know, and we'll see what happens.
Well, one indication is also we've seen, and I reported it, that an update to Tweetbot was rejected because it was transmitting the UDID over HTTPS, and the rejection reason quoted was they were sending private identity information without having asked the user first.
Correct. That's what I read also on the blog that Paul Haddad wrote on Tabloid blog. And what it says is that, you know, Apple right now is apparently still tolerating the access to UDID. If not, every single app most likely would be rejected right now. What they have a concern with is that some apps use UDID in such a manner that is problematic to them, meaning that they require the developer to ask the developer the permission. This being said, quite frankly, I have no knowledge about a directive from Apple asking such a thing, except, of course, the fact that they've deprecated the UDID, but we don't know they enforce it yet. If they were enforcing it, every single app, every single app with an SDK using the UDID, and there are a lot, would be simply rejected. So it looks like they are progressively enforcing it, but it's not very clear about how. There are testimonies about developers, saying, "Yeah, my app is accessing the UDID and I've been approved." So it's not very, very clear. It's likely that Apple is doing like a case-by-case basis and trying to progressively enforce the UDID access, but really there is no clear. What's certain is that they are not rejecting every single app that is accessing UDID. That's number one, and number two, the other thing that is clear is that there is no clear, I would say, agenda right now about how Apple is considering an app that is accessing UDID. What is the only thing that is certain is that UDID is deprecated, and that in a very short period of time, probably with the next version of iOS, there will be no way you can access it.
At least the next major version.
Yes,
And
yes.
there's one second hardware identifier that we heard about, that is the MAC address, but it seems like it's not entirely unique. There are some reports where people, especially in China, would spoof the MAC address, and so it's you kind of lose the value of it being a device identifier. But
That's right, and there is another problem with the MAC address is that actually, in the matter of data privacy, it's even worse than the UDID because it reveals some private information about your usage about the device, like the existence of private virtual networks or private enterprise networks. This is really not something that is recommended to use.
So it was AppsFire that came up with the Open UDID project, if I got that right.
That's not exactly correct. OpenUDD is a project that AppsFire supports, but it was created by Yann Leschel, who happens to be the co-founder. And if you look at the GitHub repository, you will see it's hosted under his name. But we support it along with other companies, and some have already implemented it. It's true that we were the first company to support it, and by way of connection, because Yann is a co-founder of the company, we were immediately behind it.
I'd like to know the history behind it. Did he develop it because you needed it for AppsFire, or he needed it, or was that kind of he figured there's going to be a need for a replacement, so better get started on one?
Yeah, that's the second part. Jan, we all knew about that and we discussed it, and he came up with the initiative, but we wanted to and the code obviously, but we wanted it to be very clearly disconnected from the company, because we wanted it to be open source. We wanted the community to contribute to it. We wanted this solution to be unrelated to any kind of economical relation to the company, and wanted to be an open source project. So it was very important for us that there is no direct ties to the company. Although, to be frank, yes, we thought about that problem and we needed a solution for ourselves, so we created it.
Can you summarize maybe in two or three sentences what the technical background is? How does it achieve that it actually is sort of a unique ID that's persistent?
Yes. Actually, to be frank, I'm not the right person to get into technical details because I'm not a developer. But I can highlight to some high,
Ah, that's good enough.
principles. So basically, it generates a random number per device, and this random number is persistent across updates, across reboots, can be shared among apps that are using the same OpenUDID code, and has also the ability, which is something not present today, in iOS, it has the ability to be opted out by the user, which is something, of course, that the developer needs to create on his side. So it's also, more user-friendly than what it is done today. And it's using the I can't remember exactly, but some kind of API, of public API of the iPhone, which enables you to host a set of value. I think it's the UI pasteboard or something like that, which is
But
actually identifier of the device.
doesn't the pasteboard go away when you reboot?
This is where my technical ability will
Ha,
limit
cut,
conversation.
gotcha.
I know it doesn't. At least, not in a way that would endanger the usage of the code. By the way, we've used this ourselves for a few months already, and I know it seems to work. So, if you want to know all the details about how it works, the best would be to take a look at the GitHub page about OpenUDID. Everything is explained there in a language that I'm unable to translate.
Yeah, no, that's good enough. I put the link to the GitHub repository in the show notes.
Very good.
Now, there was a bit of controversy over OpenUDID with some other developers who also have sort of a, I don't know, did they branch it or did they create something from scratch? They call themselves Secure UDID.
Yes.
Can you comment on what was the story there? Why was there fighting?
Well, actually, the fighting is not about the code itself because actually the code is not so bad. There are two problems with with what happened is that the creators of this code were initial contributors of the OpenUDID project, and they asked to be fully associated to it in the PR, and we did that as we launched the code. One day we just discovered the announcement that they thought that the code was not appropriate, and that they're creating something else, and they never said anything to us at all. They just created it, and they used some of the mechanics of the code. Actually, they had one valid point, is that this code was not enabling to do everything. It was enabling to do cross application tracking, and they were trying to solve a different problem, which is creating a secure alternative to the UDID on a per app basis. There were two problems with what happened. Is one, they did that on their side and they never said anything to us, and we were a bit surprised about that, although they were fully associated in the communication to the launch of UDID. So that's a minor problem. But the second issue, which is more important, is that they don't disclose into their project that their code is not useful for cross application tracking, and let understand that it's an alternative to OpenUDID, which is not. So both codes should exist. It could have been OpenUDID. OpenUDID might have been able to do both if those guys wanted to contribute, but for some reason they wanted to do it differently. But this is not a problem. I think it's important to understand, the most important point is that those two codes serve two different purposes. And we had an issue with them not disclosing that. And initially they didn't even disclose the fact that it was an ex kind of coming from the OpenUDID project. And now they do, but it was not very clear on their site. But this is not the critical part. So we are a bit concerned by the approach. And since it's an open source project, there is some kind of netiquette about how you contribute usually to a project. But most importantly, I think developers should be aware that those two codes are very different and two different purposes.
I did a blog post a few days ago where I basically looked on the web what kind of solution that the various ad networks are going for, and it seems that OpenUDID is actually the winner. So I have the list on my blog. I link to it. It seems that for the most part, companies don't like to kind of roll their own thing, but there is a well-supported de facto standard now in OpenUDID for this purpose?
Well, you know, I think it's a bit early to say, and I don't know if it will be the winner or not. You know, our hope when we created this project is that it would create a debate which would be, you know, qualitative enough so there is some kind of, you know, common standard that emerge. Maybe it will be OpenUDID, maybe it will be something else that comes out of it. But the important thing is that I think the noise should low down, and that there should be some kind of solution that is reliable enough, user friendly, accepted by, you know, of course by Apple, and that, you know, allows the developer who wants it to, you know, to be able to run, you know, the way that it should, their analytics, their advertising, and even some testing services that they are required to. Right now, what's happening is that because of the situation, the very recent situation, a lot of companies are trying to create alternatives to the code. So there is some noise about, you know, you should try this, you should try that. I think, you know, developers should just, you know, look at the options and make up their mind based on, you know, where they see, you know, what fits them. You know, some are very comfortable with using the MAC address. And there is, you know, the other protocol called Odin, which does that. You know, there is this company called AppRedeem, which is doing incentivized download, which also, you know, has just released something with the MAC address. You know, maybe they will progress. I don't know. But it's true that right now, OpenUDID has some traction. You know, MoPub has just announced that they are implementing it and they're supporting it officially. There is a two, three major other big networks that will announce that in the coming week. There is some traction, but it's really too early to say what's going to happen with it.
Well, if you had one wish that would be granted by Apple, wouldn't it then be for either the user's Apple ID or maybe a user-based unique identifier? Wouldn't that be the ideal thing for tracking performance?
Oh, of course, that would be. I mean, anything that comes from Apple and that would be, you know, regulated and clearly, documented, that would be more than welcome. It would be amazing. But you know, we're not there yet. So you know, if we could identify, you know, with the permission of the user, with the permission of Apple, with the relevant opt-out mechanisms, that, you know, that would make all, you know, that would make our life much easier.
Well, you mentioned opt out several times, and there's also the or several opt out initiatives when it comes to browsers, so that do not track header and so on. Wouldn't your economy meaning conversion tracking, promotion of apps, banner advertising, wouldn't all of that break down if all the users would be opting out? So what happens if you it's a good idea to offer this, but what if 90% of all users then activated, then your tracking wouldn't work anymore, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, you do have those options on the web. You know, there are, you know, browsers extensions that, you know, just cut advertising. And there are opt-out mechanisms, just how you describe, but it just happens that they are not killing the ad industry on the web, and the same thing won't happen on the mobile. And the reason is simple, is because advertising is not about the advertising industry. Advertising is about supporting quality free mobile applications, so developers can make revenues out of the effort they put into building free apps. And since users want free apps and understand the necessity of having ad-supported free apps, you know, there is no vested interest from the users to just kill this industry. This would have happened, you know, years ago on the web if that was true, and you know, when and Facebook would not even exist, or Google would not even exist. And the same thing, I think, is a reality. The reality is that there is a vibrant, you know, free app economy in the App Store. Some of the best apps into the App Store are free. You know, take even, Path and Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat that were just released, and some others. You know, all those services are free and they need advertising to live, right? So if you know if it's not possible, all these apps will you know that Apple loves too because you know they feature them and you know they want them to be there. You know they will just go away, and I don't think it's no one's interest. So the problem is not the advertising industry. The debate is around, you know, do we want a free app industry that is vibrant, but that operates according to clear rules? What's important is that, you know, if a user doesn't want to be tracked by advertising, you know, or tracked at all for any kind of other reasons, there could be other reasons than advertising. You know, talk about, you know, you couldn't not, you know, you I wouldn't want to be tracked for any other kind of reasons like analytics, for example. Then I should have this possibility, but right now there is no, you know, clear way to do that. You know, there is no way to do that.
So that there should be some sort of privacy tab in the settings that will say, okay, I allow analytics of app usage, I allow tracking of my identity, and if somebody turns that off, he's not tracked. But well, the problem is then, can he still download free apps? And
He can download, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, there are some apps that if you are not tracked, then the app cannot work, right? So I don't know, I'm trying to think about a live example, but, you know, if you are saying to Facebook, you know, don't, you know, or Foursquare, you know, don't track where I am, you know, you cannot do check-in, and then you're a bit in a problem, right? So yeah, you can opt out of being tracked, but then, you know, some apps will be inoperative, and you know, but some other you know maybe or will be. So right now I think, you know, it's not just a question about is there a button to be opt out and to be untracked. I think there is a much bigger question about industry practices and regulations, and right now there is kind of a gray area around that. There is no equivalent of what, you know, IAB has done for the web industry, the web advertising industry. There is no equivalent of, you know, all the privacy initiatives that have been done on the web. And you know, I think those will be, you know, a button that is opted out, you know, is just will be a consequence of regulations, will be a consequence of you know, a conversation going into the industry. But right now there's nothing going on. At least not that is visible enough and that is involving enough, you know, all the key players, including the developers. So I think right now we're just at the very beginning of something that may change in the future.
All right. Well, speaking of the future, I'd like to actually know a bit more about AppsFire. You're sponsoring the 5x5 podcast right now, and I've in the past noticed AppsFire because you were doing some was it contests or some where you voted for the best apps that people nominated. What does AppsFire do? What is it something that you can do for me as a iOS developer?
Yeah, absolutely. What we first we AppsFire is a consumer service. We cr create discovery guides for mobile users who have an iPhone, an iPad, and also Android, and we help them discovering apps in a new manner, in a discovery mechanism that you will not find into the App Store. So, or the Android market. So we help you find the apps of your friends. We help you find the apps by a series of themes that you are interested in. We help you find the apps that are in a discount at a moment in time, and that are relevant to your city, that are, you know, used by certain personalities. So things you cannot find necessarily in the App Store, and we do that in a very nice user interface. So we first a user mobile application for finding apps. That's the number one activity. But because we became quite popular and it's been downloaded over 5 million times, now we are able to work with developers who are interested in trying to find an efficient marketing channel to get more visibility and quality users. So in the industry, you have two kind of players. You have those who do incentivized download, who will pay users to download an app or reward them to download an app, and you will find other sets of solutions like ours, which do organic download from users who are just interested in the apps that you propose them. So we are in this category, and we have a range of advertising services that are opt-in and high intent that allows a user to know about an app that is interesting. We don't work with every single developer. We try to work only with the best, and we try to have a filter. So only the best applications are promoted to our users, and we promote only one application a day within our guides. And so that's our activity. We work with developers to on their user acquisition program on an opt-in, non-incentivized manner. And
So, can we summarize what does the user see from AppsFlyer? You said there is a an app that I would download from the
right.
App Store
You go
that
to the store, you download AppsFlyer, and then we have another, we have a few apps based on how you want to discover apps. And then you open it, and you will have a guide which will offer you a way to personalize your experience based on what you like. And you will see, it looks a little bit like Pulse, if you know Pulse for news. We see streams of applications. It's very fast, very nice user experience, and all of that are unpaid recommendation of applications. But
You
once
mentioned you can know the apps your friends use, but for this to work, you'd have to somehow tell AppsFlyer what apps you ha actually use yourself, right?
correct, and this is fully opt-in. So you declare the app that you have, and you only declare what you want. So you don't have to show to say about everything, and then you connect to Facebook. And then once your friends connect to Facebook, they will be able to see the apps that you have on your device and that you like. So that's what the users see. They will see these guides of applications based on their personality and where they are. And on the other side, once a day, we will highlight one application which is a promoted app. And this is where we work with developers, and we can generate in a day tens of thousands or hundred, sometimes over 100,000 downloads for them in an opt-in manner. So it accelerates their user acquisition program. But the second activity we just launched about a month ago is now we are working with them on engagement. So it concerns both those who are small or very big. And as you know, most applications are forgotten after a few weeks. So now we've created an SDK that allow the developer to engage better in a more efficient manner with their users and keep them engaged into their app by the way of a notification inbox. And
So you get a push notification. You haven't opened application X for 1 month. Can you please open it now?
actually, no, we don't do push notification.
No.
We do in-app notification. So you need to open the app to see the message.
Ah,
You
okay.
just have a small bubble on the icon that will let you know that you have a message. But we're not in the business of push notification. So we're not intrusive in that manner. You can, for example, notify when there is an update. You can, notify when there is a bug. You can organize contests. You can organize a poll. You can, cross-promote your other apps if you have other apps, et cetera, and it has dramatic, very positive impact into how your app is used. And so far, 300 developers have already downloaded the SDK. We have already reached over 1 million users weekly in this network, and it's growing and growing.
So let's also touch the side of the developer. If I would be interested in getting promoted, so can you give me a ballpark as to what budget I would have to have, or is it like completely dynamic? So I'm thinking that sounds also great, but it's probably so expensive that I can't afford it.
No, it's not so expensive. I mean, it's not very cheap, but it's not so expensive. So our minimum order is $1,500, and and from there you can go up and up. But you can start promoting your service on a specific country. It doesn't have to be just, the US. We present all over the world, including in Asia and in Europe. So you can target only one country. And you can start working with us from that budget. But for some, $1,500 will sound a lot. But if this is the case, it means that maybe you don't have you don't have a real business with your app.
Well, what would I be getting for that kind of money?
It will all depend on the quality or the quality of your app. Most of the time, you will see an impact about whatever you get as a download per day. You will see a lot more downloads. In the order of magnitude of time two, time three. But it can be a lot more.
Okay,
So.
that, no, that's downloads. That's the secondary effect. But I'm think. My question is, I pay you that amount. What is it that you do for this kind of money?
Oh no, like I said, we will highlight your app into our guides, okay? Once a day, we select one app and all our users will be aware of it and they will decide whether or not they want to download it, right? So for that money, it's we invoice on a per click basis. It's like Google, or it's like a bit like iAd where you pay on a per click basis, and you will get a number of clicks for the money that you put. And will generate your leads to your App Store page, and people there will decide if they want to download it or not.
So you basically pay for clicks to the
Correct.
iTunes page.
Correct.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah, so we're not actually to come back on the idea. We could live without it because we don't sell on an install basis, right? So we don't need we do, we could live without it. But it's just that our advertisers and customers, they want to measure this performance. But we don't sell on a per performance basis like most incentivized networks do.
All right. Well, that's been very enlightening, Uriel. Thanks for being on the show and telling me your side of the story about UDID and AppsFlyer. And that it sounds like a great service. I encourage my listeners to go and check it out and at least download the free app and have a look at that. I know I'm going to do that because I haven't done so yet.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and see you soon on AppsFlyer then.
All right, thank
Bye.
you.
Bye bye.
Bye. I'd love to hear from you. You can always email me at oliver@coconetics.com or tweet me at coconetics. If you want to give me audio feedback or have some interested comment for me to play on the show, please call my Google Voice mailbox 415-860-4324. 415-860-4324.